Okay, that should be it. Let's go down to feasibility. Yeah, it looks like relatively high feasibility scores. Comments from the group other than what's in the minuscule type?
I think that we need feasibility. When I was thinking about it, was feasibility for a particular system to do it for themselves. Yeah. It's not feasibility as we sort of talked about it through the course of this conversation. You know, they don't really say that in their submittal, but this is a psychiatric hospital. That's all they do. Right. So I sort of that was one of my comments right. too. But I
and there are
well,
places
I mean, they were talking yeah. about. Yeah. I made the assumption that it was psychiatric.
Yeah. There are places earlier that they refer to okay. psychiatric patients. I forget which category it is. But they yeah. refer to
so
psychiatric hospital of psychiatric patients. So, I mean, at least the summary is psychiatric hospital or unit.
I just think it's worth pointing out, just to put this in context, that the current NQF-approved readmission measure for other conditions is all-cause readmission. So that if you've, you know, treated somebody, you know, with an acute MI and then, you know, 2 weeks later they get hit by a bus and come in the hospital, then that gets counted.
And actually, and I'm looking back at my comments, it does, in the denominator and numerator, it just says all patients. And so that was one of my questions. It didn't say psychiatric patients or what they were talking about.
So it sounds like there's some issues perhaps of the title of the measure and the specifications maybe not quite lining up. Other feasibility, though, reflections?
Caution, this is only if you're a system. And this...
It will be what it is.
It doesn't sound like you're going to recommend it, so I don't think we need to worry yet about that.
But you know, there is a kind of inverse relationship between sort of feasibility and you know, some of the other criteria, because you know, if you're, you know, it's actually it is very feasible if you're doing it all within your own database.
People in the work group, did they specify this was a measure for a system, for a healthcare system?
Yeah,
only. They didn't propose this to be more broadly used?
Actually, that's not part of the
analysis. Oh, okay. They talked about discharge from the hospital and readmission back to the hospital.
But,
right. But, you know, for instance, when it talks about use in public reporting initiative, it talks about within our multi-system multi-hospital system, this measure, blah, blah, blah. I mean, throughout, they tend to make references to within their system.
Right. If you look...
They made that clear, but
they made it clear that all this was designed and used in their system,
well,
tested in their system. They didn't really address how it would translate.
Yeah. Well,
into
they did.
They
actually
did.
There is a section. There is a question on level of measurement or analysis. It's right at the end of the specification section, and they said facility or agency or multi-site corporate chain. So they really are talking about something that's
no facility
mm-hmm.
or agency.
Right.
Or chain.
Right. Correct.
Just
Right, but it's like not individual provider sort of thing.
That's the data they have.
The facility only issue is a feasibility problem.
So...
Well, I'm not sure.
I think one of the problems is this measure was... Okay, please.
Sorry. Excuse me, if it's... only within your facility, then it's, you know, the feasibility is high, but the, you know, the utility is lower. On the other hand, if it's all sources of all places of readmission, then it's, you know, feasible for a payer, but not for a facility. So
So if I may, in section 4, D1, they specifically say, also important to note the possibility that some patients are or would be readmitted to a different hospital and or facility. As a result, the figures for a given facility / operation would come with the caveat that it may not be the true total figure for the facility.
So, that's under the note thing, but when they specify the numerator denominator, how do they...
I mean, they don't talk about it, and I noted it that it was specifically an issue they didn't talk about.
Is there a way that we can interact with them to know exactly what they're talking about?
I think what we have here today is the data they've provided. It was from a health system or hospital perspective in a single entity, and we have to really vote on what we have before us. I think I'm sure Ian and staff did the best they could to clarify the issues here. And I think we should judge it on what's been submitted.
Just one thing that we did with the medication management measures steering committee is that we were disappointed with a lot of what we got. I think I mentioned this at the last meeting. And so what we did was we did not approve things, but pending further discussions might approve it if the measure developer was willing to make some changes. And is that something that we can do now? So if they clarify the fact that the intention is that they would have it be applicable to a, you know, for a payer.
They couldn't maintain it then. It would have to be a different submitter.
Why?
This is the only, like to me, this is completely logical. If a health system wants to do internal monitoring of themselves on how they're
I'm saying that a health system can propose anything they want.
But they have to be able to do what the NQF wants them to do, right?
Right. If I have my own little corporation, I can propose anything I want, and if I'm willing to do whatever the stewardship requires.
Maintain the measure.
Well, how do you know?
Riva, you had a comment, I think, and then.
Well, but you don't. You got to give them. You know, you can't say they don't, because in fact they do. They own a major payer.
Okay, Riva. Yeah.
They actually it's
in
three.
Yes, it certainly there are times when discussions with the major steward. There are suggestions that a steering committee will make that they are amenable to making changes, that your approval is conditional on them making those changes. So that's possible. However, I would caution you, one, with outcome measures, that's hard to do. You don't turn those on a dime. So you don't tweak around the edges very readily on outcome measures as you might on certain process measures. And to the degree, one of the reasons our measure developers have been invited to participate, and I don't know if the fact that we're not on the phone is causing us a problem their not participation.
Oh, so I don't know. No, nobody's on the phone?
Ian?
Do we have a developer on the phone? Can we do a roll?
Hold on just one second. So I guess we can ask again if the major, if one of the major developers from Presby Shadyside is on the phone. Because I know I had talked to them and they were planning on it. I know we have had some issues.
Who is on the line, perhaps, asking?
Yeah, that's them.
Okay, so I think we are actually on your measure currently, which is a readmission measure. And I think there are some questions that people might have. Can you hear us okay? Okay, let me ask the group if there's some specific focus questions for the measure developer.
I guess I thought we had a question about the specific of the numerator with regard to whether the readmission has to be at the specific facility from which the patient was discharged, or is it from any facility within some sort of range of location, I guess.
So did you hear that?
Yes, I heard you, and that's a good question, because that is internally, based on what we are measuring ourselves, we are only able to see people who are readmitted to our facility, because that's the data we've got. And I'm expecting that, that is what we are proposing as well. However, on a much higher level, if it is possible to see readmission across systems, that would be ideal.
Thank you. Are there follow-up or other, Harold?
Well, we would agree.
What exactly are you proposing?
So the question is, what are you proposing?
The question is, what are you proposing? Is it at a single hospital or health system, or is it at a broader level? Okay, thank you.
And are the readmissions just psychiatric readmissions or any readmissions?
Psychiatric readmissions.
And is that determined from an hospital administrative database, or do you have a payer database that you use for that?
Okay, so I think we have better clarity about the measure and the intent from the measure developer. Are there any other questions from the committee about this measure for the measure developer?
Yes. Do you have access to a payer database to track readmissions? And if so, do you see a way that you could use this measure more widely beyond your own system?
Or at least to test it.
Or to be able to test it beyond your system.
Can you repeat that?
You said that you have obtained this data from your own hospital administrative database. What I'm asking is, do you have access to a payer database where you could get the same readmission information not only for your own institution but for other perhaps regional institutions so that you could test this measure more widely?
Currently, we do not have that information available to us readily, and we are not measuring that level of readmission rate. We are currently just measuring the readmission within
Couldn't you work with CCBH or?
Okay, thank you very much. Let's turn back then to feasibility and see if there's any further comments. And if not, why don't we go ahead and vote on feasibility completely? Partially. Minimally?
Five.
Not at all. And that gives us 15. Harold is gone.
I got 11 on the partially revote. Okay. So that would give us 17. If one.
Okay. So we've got the count correct. And let's move forward. Any final questions that the committee has for the measure developer, or any final comments the measure developer would like to make prior to our vote?
Or public
comments. Thank you. Hearing none, let's go ahead and vote. All those who would vote yes for the recommendation, please raise your hand. All those who vote no, please, same sign. So the vote is 17 no's, 0 yes. Thank you very much. So let us go on to the next set, which I think will probably go a bit quicker given our conversation. And now we're at the 7-day readmission measure. Was this also submitted by Western?
Correct, yeah.
Okay.
All three of these at the different time intervals were all Western.
Okay. Any additional comments you'd like to provide from Western Psych?
Yes, I'll ask a question.
Please, Richard.
As long as they're on the phone, I'd like to hear their comment, their thoughts about the risk adjustment efforts they made and why or why not that they made those comments.
Hello, folks at Western Psych, are you still on? She hung up.
After the vote.
She was so she's now on a suicidal watch. Have we done a care plan with her? Okay.
I didn't.
Oh, no.
She's on the phone.
Okay, Dr. Goldberg has a question for you.
Could you comment on what kind of thinking you did about risk or severity adjustment in relation to this measure and what you included in it or what you didn't include?
Okay, so I hear that there is some risk adjustment activity in process. Thank you. From the group that reviewed this, are there additional new comments or let's focus first on importance?
Actually, it would be helpful to me since I'm not an expert on all-cause readmissions, and I know NQF has had experience with these. What is the current thinking about this whole issue of risk adjustment for causality?
I thought you were going to ask a different question.
You can answer the other one first.
Okay. The concept around all-cause, because this discussion has been ongoing, a couple of things. The idea that you look at a patient's episode of care and services from their perspective, regardless of why a patient might be there, especially with multiple comorbidities and other things going on, that to focus in on whatever the primary reason for diagnosis and exclude all other things and let the, you know, the diabetes become problematic and not be attended to during the course, or their depression not be attended to during the course of their stay for heart failure or whatever else, is not appropriate and certainly not a way we want to move to. So the idea is you really do want to look at all aspects of the patient's care, and that any lack of attention to some of these other comorbidities might be the reason for their readmission, and that's a fair sort of thing. Also, what we've certainly started having conversations about is when you start looking at a list of what is or isn't related to the primary admission, it becomes very difficult to sort them into black and white buckets. You know, you might think that the heart, that, you know, a patient who's been discharged and then, you know, has a car accident, but what if they had an arrhythmia or syncopal episode as a result of their heart problem that causes them to be in the accident? So you can start having a real difficult time parsing those out. And so the all-cause, and realizing that, you know, that all-cause applies across the board to everyone. So that there's going to be, you'll never hit zero readmissions, but the idea is to reduce them to as low as possible. So those are the current, you know, sort of dynamics of the discussion around the all-cause readmission concept.
And I'll ask my second question after you.
I mean, to what extent, since these measures have been out there for a while, have we actually found that hospitals have been, or systems have been able to reduce their readmission rates?
Well, considering it's one of the biggest focuses for quality improvement, you're seeing a lot of particularly the forward-thinking hospitals, but a lot of systems really trying to come up with some innovative ways of doing patient follow-up, of facilitating that care transition, asking what is it that's important about it to keep them from bouncing back into the hospital. So it actually is a huge focus right now. And I think you're going to see in the literature starting reports that are demonstrating a whole variety of approaches that may be appropriate, which is why then people say the outcome measure is really the most useful tool, because however you got there is fine as long as the readmission itself is reduced. So that's kind of the approach.
I mean, are those data appearing already for conditions that have been measured for a while in this way?
Yeah, I don't think they've been measured all that long. I think the readmission measure's only been up for a year maybe.
Last June.
Yeah, so it within started. The last year. So I don't think we've got lots of longitudinal data as yet. But that, yeah, for Medicare, it's the big push for this one. But I think we will, you know, in a couple of years. But there isn't a lot of longitudinal data right yet.
But there are some samples of, not in mental health specifically, but across all, there are some evidence-based practices that have been found and replicated.
Yeah,
so that's starting to come out, like in Colorado is one, but mostly around discharge and care.
Right, because certainly embedded in this is the presumption that there's been some failure leading to the readmission, or quality problems leading to the readmission, and certainly anecdotally you discover that in individual cases, but I'm wondering if the data would bear that out.
There's an article in New England Journal a few months ago where the Congressional Budget Office reported on what's likely to work to reduce costs. It was a little unsettling because they said that electronic medical record, the primary care medical home, did not. It was hospital readmissions they projected was the only of the five or six items they reviewed. It was only hospital readmissions that was likely to reduce costs. It was surprising that some of the other panaceas that were holding up, according to CBO, wouldn't accomplish much.
So a PCMH could potentially, who knows? Eric?
Yeah, there's some old data and reports from the VA hospital that used the 7-day readmit and looked at unforeseen consequences. And one of the things that they found when they had a psychiatric-only readmit diagnosis is that you got diagnostic fiddling. And so what you had was they get readmitted for a non-psych diagnosis, or when they had a seven-day readmit, they wouldn't readmit until after the seventh day. There was, you know, people were being kept in 22-hour holding, a whole lot of things, because there were some real consequences for incentive payments. So in support of what Reva was saying about all-cause readmissions, if you don't do it, you set it up for people to do diagnostic fiddling.
Joel, did you have another question?
Yeah, and again, this is for Reva or anyone else who's the expert here. What do we know about the validity of 7-day, 48-hour, 7-day, 30-day in terms of validity, content validity?
To me, what I would say, and I'm no expert on this, is I think that would be dependent on the reason for the initial admission. And I would ask you all, as the mental health experts, what is it about that particular condition and the hospitalization, what does or doesn't happen during that hospitalization and care transition, that what is the time frame that would be the most useful in for public reporting and pushing improvements in quality? When the arguments in favor for the more medical conditions like heart failure, AMI, I mean, those are sort of a traditional, everybody's comfortable with looking at what's going on for 30 days. But I'm not sure that is necessarily applicable in the mental health field. I think some conditions might be different.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of heterogeneity across conditions in terms of time to relapse, time to recurrence. Even if you look at, take a simple example like bipolar illness, where you have recurrences that are part of the chronic illness, an expected part of the chronic illness. And some people cycle rapidly and some people cycle slowly. That's the intrinsic nature of the illness itself. But the factors we're trying to get at with these measures have to do with how we provide care and how we can influence outcomes. And, I think it's very hard to come up with a time interval that makes both clinical sense. But my question was really about what time interval makes sense in terms of quality measurement. And I don't know whether anybody's really been able to tease that apart. Again, I don't know that literature myself.
Time intervals, if they've looked at it, if she's still on the phone.
Is our measure developer still on the phone from Western Psych? There's a question here about the rationale of 48 hours, 7-day, 30-day, and whether you've actually accumulated data that reflects these readmission rates and how it might inform us, knowing sort of where the points for improvement might be in the process here. Did you want to follow up, Joel?
No. So are you saying that you do have comparative data looking at readmission rates for 48 hours, 7 days, and 30 days?
Yes. We do have 7 days, 30 days, 48 hours of readmission rate data, but I don't have that number currently.
Well, even if you don't have the numbers, can you tell us why whether you think the differences are informative about which time interval is most helpful for measuring quality?
We believe that the shorter time interval is usually most indicative of the quality of service delivered at the hospital that is discharging. And as the time interval becomes larger and larger, less of the readmission rate can be attributed directly to the discharging hospital. We currently use this information as
Thank you. Okay, well, if there aren't any more general questions, why don't we go down the list here? This is on the 7-day readmission. We're looking at importance. How many believe completely on importance? How about partially?
18. That looks like everybody.
Okay. Let's go down then to scientific acceptability. Any new or differing information from the comments of the past discussion?
I would just mention that the submissions for all three time intervals for measurement were identical, except for the difference in 48, 7, and 30.
Okay, then. Thank you very much, Harold, for that suggestion. Is it the wisdom of the group that we replicate our findings here, and perhaps we can move to a vote so we have that formula? I'm seeing a lot of head nodding. How many would vote in favor of recommending this measure for acceptance? How many would vote against? Raise your hands, please, so the count can ensue. 18. Okay, so the final count is 18 against, 0, 4.
But I would also recommend that there be interaction with the measure developers about potentially adapting this measure to respond to some of the concerns that we had.
So I'm hearing there's one of our parking lot issues here is that this general concept is obviously quite important, and that perhaps encouraging the measure developer to do some further work would be very beneficial to the field. So.
But also, I mean, like I said, when we did the vegetation management thing, we told the Joint Commission that we weren't going to approve it unless they did X, and then they did X and we approved it.
I mean, you could say that you would like certain things completed to these measures, and if those were met, then you would recommend it. And we can take those back to the developer and ask them. I think the question is you'd have to go really detailed and give them really explicit information on this measure. I guess the question is, for these three measures, will you be able to do that, and will they be able to then respond back in the time frame we have? Or is it too big?
I don't know. I think it's a question. I'm not sure, but if they said that these measures were to apply to all readmissions in the region, would that be accepted?
Reva?
Well, there are some of those questions I think we can get clarification on, but one of the major things I heard from all of you is the lack of risk adjustment as being sort of the major downfall for these measures for this purpose. And I think that's pretty big to try and get that fixed too quickly.
But it also sounds like they're working on it.
Right.
Yeah.
It almost sounds like they just need to get farther along in the development and come back to us.
Yeah.
I think, again, since you are, I assume, still on the phone, the general sense of the group is that this is great work, but there's some elements, including looking carefully at the numerator denominator specifications and the risk adjustment process, that could make this a very viable measure.
And the other factor I would add to that list is the availability of payer data so that you can look across systems within a region.
So now we're at the 48-hour again. Is it okay with... Okay, same thing. Well, I thought we had to for the sake, but if not, same vote? Okay, fine. Okay, well then I'm going to declare victory and ask if there's any NQF member or public comments. Hearing none, it looks to me like it is now 10 of 3. We're sort of ahead. Would it be the wisdom of the group to launch on to substance abuse or take a break?
Short break.
How about we've got 10 of 3. How about at 3 o'clock, more or less? Okay. Thank you.
And I guess just a brief reminder, if you do have to make phone calls or do something, please go down the lobby. I know, I think they're just doing something out there, so they just want us to either stay here or go down the lobby if we do have to make phone calls.
Thank you very much to our colleagues at Western Psych.
We're definitely ending by 4:45 today because the room's only available till 5 and we have to give NQF time to get whatever stuff they need out after we end.
I think actually we might be meeting in NQF offices on our 6th floor, but I will confirm that before we end this meeting. So that's just an email I got briefly, so I will let the entire steering committee know the actual outcome before we leave, but our offices are just right over there on the 6th floor. So you know, I don't know. I think part of the issue might be the phone lines. We have a setup that we can handle for the phone in our own offices. So
the other thing is just we have 2 meetings going today.
So Tricia and I had this great plan that we were going to alternate facilitation, but then we had the work group order change, so you'll have to put up with me through this next set of measures. We'll work till about 4:45 and do as many as we can, with the first one up being substance abuse patients, clinical status, recovery, and substance abuse treatment. That group, if you were a member of that, myself, Eric, who else was a member of the group?
Work group 4.
Okay, good. So we're on, and the first one we're going to be considering is the milestones of recovery scale. And I'll ask Ian to provide a brief review of that.
So we're working right now on measure number 10, milestone of recovery scale. And Heidi, I think, is just scrolling down to that shortly. So we'll be there in a second. Just a brief description of this measure. So the milestone recovery scale is a one-item self-administered scale that indicates where an individual is in the process of recovery from a severe... severe, and I'm sorry, my table. Is that covered? I guess my page got lost.
Severe and persistent mental illness. The scale is designed
for use with adults with severe and persistent mental illness, 18 years and above. Scale measures 3 underlying constructs: level of risk, level of engagement, and level of skills and supports. Combined to create the following 8 categories: extreme risk, high risk not engaged, high risk engaged, poorly coping not engaged, poorly coping engaged, coping rehabilitating, early recovery, advanced recovery.
Perfect. Thank you.
So that was the tag team there.
This is measure number 10.
And also just, this is work group 4, so you'll find that a little further along if you're looking at these number of ratings.
Do you have page numbers for the document?
No. So I believe that if on the Word document that was sent out for what's being projected up there, I believe you said it was page 36? Page 36 for those who are following.
34, 36, 35. I mean, this is an inexact process.
In that general.
I messed up the pages on the screen.
Oh, okay. All right. So for those of us who had an opportunity to look at this, thoughts about whether, first of all, this was an outcomes measure or process measure?
I think it's
I was one of the probably disappointed reviewers in that I did not think that this was an outcomes measure. It also really didn't show any change scores. It most of the measure was not filled in, so it was very difficult to know what to make of this measure because they didn't essentially complete the form. But my sense was it was an interesting area, but we have no idea about the reliability, validity, So it's an important issue. Is it an outcome measure? I don't think so.
Luke and Sheila?
So I'd agree that knowing where someone is in recovery is an important thing, but I would agree with Eric that there were no studies or evidence that the measure's effective for reporting on outcomes.
And also, this is a staff-reported measure without good anchors, and that has incredible demand characteristics.
So, the first step, and then I'll get to Harold's comment here or question, is to decide whether this meets the scope or not. And I think we should clarify whether we believe we want to go through the process. I think it's in scope. So let me take Harold and then get back to that issue.
So looking at the importance and scope is we're evaluating the measure or the concept, I'm having a hard time sort of understanding what the concept is behind it. I mean, the concept of measuring recovery seems to be an important concept, but what I don't have a good idea looking just at this, how they've kind of operationalized that concept in a meaningful way.
Go ahead.
I can respond only because I'm somewhat familiar with the use of this tool in California. It's been pretty widely used in some really innovative and strong programs that are addressing many of the outcomes that in our meeting last fall we said we really wanted to be looking at. So even though I'm not in that group and didn't actually see what they submitted to us, I am somewhat familiar with the instrument, so I brought a copy of it. I mean, the way in which they look at, poorly coping, not engaged is, these are folks who, so they're sort of towards the middle of this. It addresses their symptoms. They may have moderate to high symptom distress. They may use drugs or alcohol, which may be causing moderate but intermittent disruption. It talks about their thinking. They may not think they have a mental illness. They're not participating voluntarily in ongoing mental health treatment. Some of the other measures then get into details like how often are they going to jail? Are they in stable housing? So to the extent to which in our discussion of outcome measures last fall, we came up with this really big list of things like, are people homeless? Are they going to jail? Are they managing their symptoms? Are they functioning well? Bundled inside what looks like a really simple list here is a lot of detail about, detail meaning that it'll fit on one page, but it's more than just what you see there.
So apart from the... Apart from the issues of the usability, the psychometric properties, and so on, I'm hearing that this is a multidimensional composite score which embodies many of the dimensions of outcomes that we talked about at our last meeting. And I wonder, particularly for the group that's had some time to look at this, recognizing that many of us aren't familiar with the instrument itself, does that meet the scope criteria?
For me, it seems to.
I mean, I would...
I wasn't in the group, but I was one of the people who, I saw this as an outcomes measure from the beginning. I mean, it seemed to, I can't speak to the science, I know we'll have a discussion of that, but we're talking about people with severe persistent mental illness whose disorder cuts across many categories of where they live and level of function and comorbidities and psychiatric symptoms. I mean, it kind of bundles all those in a way that allows you to say, what's their outcome at this point? And is their outcome at this point any better? So I thought it was on track in some way as a category, and it seems to me that it's within scope, and we'll have to discuss the other dimensions of it.
Eric?
I think there were two parts of challenge for this. One is that we didn't have the detail either. All we had were the 8 descriptors. Second is that nobody submitted, say, the global functioning. Global functioning is used a lot. You know, you get a GAF score, but it's a measure. It's not an outcome. Or you could use the basis, or you could use, a whole lot of different measures. The measure itself is not an outcome. It's the use of the measure in a context, either change score or... And so that's where I had the difficulty with an outcome, is it told us about a measure which seemed to have some difficulties, rather than its use in engaging outcomes.
So if we look at the underlying embodied behaviors that are in each of these categories, would going to jail a lot or being an abuser be patient-oriented outcomes that would matter? And I would submit those really are. Now, it's hard to know that from the summary staging, but knowing the underlying constructs, I think it's sort of right within the scope of what we should be doing. But again, that's just one person's opinion.
To me, I think the confusion for me, and I think part of this was maybe the author's interpretation of what NQF wanted, was that if the measure said improvement over 1 year using the milestone of recovery scale, then that's an outcome, right? And I think implicit in the use of this recovery scale is, my guess, the author's assumption that the outcome is that they're improving, but they're not writing it that way. It makes it a little confusing to me.
The other confusing part for me was, even in the introduction, they say, it only takes 15 seconds to do this.
Yeah.
And I'm like, not having seen the tool at all, I'm like, really? Wow. So
maybe they meant 15 hours.
Because there is a rich amount of information behind it, supposedly. I haven't seen it.
Yeah, it's like if you're doing a clinical global impression of severity, it only takes 15 seconds to score it. But you know the patient's baseline, you know a lot of information.
Yeah, I mean, it seems to me there's no question that this is sort of an outcomes thing. And Eric, I disagree. I think the GAF is an outcomes measure. I mean, it's not a good one.
It can be used as an outcome measure.
Mm-hmm. Well, measure. Anything. I mean, the intent is, I mean, clearly the intent is to do that. That's what they,
Was there any attempt to define baseline?
No.
But there's at least what they report here is they report actually a fair amount, they don't give any citations, but they do report a fair amount of research on this. I mean, in terms of inter-rate reliability coefficient of 0.85 with test-retest reliability of 0.85. So they, have been, it is also strongly correlated in the predicted direction with the multinomic community ability scale.
I'm going to get Reva and then Bill.
Yeah, one thing I just want to tell you that Carol just pointed me in the direction of where to find this document that has all this information, and I'll be more than happy to, when we're done here, I'll go get it and I'll send it out so everybody has it.
Yeah.
So that, if you feel that you need that to really get a good handle on this measure, we can get it for you.
Yeah, although it doesn't get into, the actual information about, looking at sort of citations for it and how they conducted those assessments.
Bill?
One criteria for assessing this measure, which is not in your master list, is validation. I mean, you have basically a provider-generated measure. So the person who's being evaluated is the person filling out the assessment. And so if you start to go into an accountability measure, I mean, it can be gamed. And the question is, how does an outside entity validate that the reporting is actually reflective of the care? I think that'd be very tricky business and could be an issue for this particular measure.
So let me entertain a vote, if there aren't any other discussions, of whether this is in scope or out of scope. Because if it's out of scope, then we needn't go further. If it's in scope, then we need to do the rigorous work that goes. So would you please vote first if you believe that it is out of scope, a process measure not sufficiently linked to outcomes? Well, okay. I'm just joined by the order up there. How about in scope? Raise your hand. We're just trying to see if you're awake. Abstentions? One from Eric. Okay. Yeah. Okay, so let's then go on and just go through our process, and I think these other issues will probably come up. First of all, importance to measure and report impact gap in relation to outcomes. From the work group first.
Same thing that I said before, that, you know, the concept is in alignment with the recovery model applied to mental health, but we found no studies of or evidence that the measure is effective. It's an important concept.
So remember, this is more the importance of the concept or the dimensions being measured as opposed to the measure itself. So I would, when I looked at it, or now with the benefit of going through these, seems to me like this is an important concept, that the recovery process, recovery model as an outcome is pretty important, and that patients value that and patient advocates value that highly.
So even though the title says, or measure says milestones to a recovery scale, we're not voting on the scale itself?
You're voting on what's, well, for the importance criteria, the question of measuring this using a tool, perhaps this one or others if they happen to exist, is the concept of the measure. Then you'll look at the specific characteristics of how the specs are for this particular measure.
So we're voting on milestones of recovery, not with capital letters, but with lowercase.
Absolutely. Joel, you have a wonderful way of distilling things down. Sheila, any thoughts or comments from your review?
I think that some of the other discussion that comes up really comes up in terms of scientific acceptability.
Luke, any further comments? Eric?
I agree with Sheila completely.
Are we ready to vote on importance then? Completely? Partially.
Five.
Okay, so we're done with that part. Now let's go on to scientific acceptability. I think this is an area where there probably is some more concerns, at least from my point of view.
We'll base our discussion on what they submitted, not this addendum at this point.
Reva?
We're on capital letters.
Yeah, so what's your guidance on that? Do we have to ignore this?
Part of what was in the document were links to the PDF, I think, of the criteria that were passed around, but they weren't linkable in the PDF that we had. So the PDF is implicated there, so I'm guessing that they were submitted, but when we reviewed them, we didn't have access to them.
That's true.
What we can do is provide it to you, and then Ian, we're going to have him come on another call again, most likely, right?
Yeah.
You can discuss it then after you have time to review it.
Yeah,
that's fine to table it now.
I just wouldn't want them to be penalized for us not reviewing what they probably did submit.
I think in this one it would be useful for us to read the numerator and denominator because it doesn't come clearly in the description. The numerator details is the sum of all clients who have a higher MORS score at the end of a specified time frame than they had at the beginning of the time frame. And the denominator is the number of all clients who are given an admission MORS score at any time during the specified time frame.
So it's sort of imagine what you're going to measure at any time and place, and we'll call it an outcome.
So it was
So there's no attention to speed of recovery or recovery trajectory here. So if they come back 2 weeks later and they get a Moore score and they're no better, that would be actually excluded because from the numerator, right, because they're not improved.
That'd be right.
Yeah.
I mean, this comes from the village, and that was where it was developed. And these are the most severely mentally ill, who are in prisons and jails. And so they're really looking at probably a longer time frame of a year or a couple of years. And it probably wouldn't, say, work for acute psychiatric.
It's a big group.
Bill?
So this, we're on a scientific piece right now.
Yes.
It would strike me, people looked at this, was there any statements about inter-observer reliability? I could see, depending on who filled out the tool, you could get great variation.
Yeah.
And is it actually pretty good?
Mm-hmm. Pretty high. It is. What they reported was 0.85.
In a 15-second assessment. That's interesting.
Just to interject quickly, I know the major developer's on the line. He just sent me an email. He's having a hard time hearing discussion. So if you are speaking, just try to make sure we use the mics or speak clearly.
It was limited to a regional sample. I mean, it's pretty much California, and they talked about working with someone in Boston, I think, at some point.
So there's discussion of the reliability testing using a primary and secondary rater, blind to the other raters, a total of 105 clients rated by two individuals, test-retest reliability, 2 points in time during a single month in California, and 381 clients with the interval ranging from 10 to 20 days. So there actually is, you know, at least some inter-rater and test-retest reliability, and the correlations actually are pretty good. Inter-rater reliability achieved using clients and staff was 0.85. Inter-rater reliability using clients and staff at another place was R equals 0.86. Test-retest reliability, R equals 0.85, you know, so I think pretty robust, albeit in a relatively finite sample.
The specific methodology was used for doing this, I mean, that's, and has it been published?
Since the developer's on the phone, they could provide a little background if that'd be helpful.
Yeah, developer, are you on the phone? Can you hear us?
I can hear some of you, some I can't hear at all.
Okay, well, what we're talking about right now is the reliability testing, and we wonder if you might be able to describe a little bit further what sort of reliability testing has been done and where and if that has been published.
Iterator reliability coefficient. Basically,